Welcome to the Booktopia podcast. I'm Sarah McDewing and I'm here today with Emily Meredith and author of the brand new book Road to Winter, Mark Smith.
Hi, how are you going?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, I'm well.
Mark, can you tell us about your new book?
The Road to Winter is it's a young adult novel set on the west coast of Victoria, where I live and have worked for the last 20 odd years. And it tells the story of a 16-year-old boy, Finn Morrison, who is living in a quarantined coastal town on his own after a massive virus has wiped out most of the population. And in this not too distant future, asylum seekers have been bought in from detention centres and bought and sold at public auction. So they become slaves, basically an underclass. And Finn survives for 2 years on his own. You know, he's a very resourceful young guy. He hunts, he fishes, he dives, and he trades food with an older guy, Ray, who lives out of town. But he's lonely, misses his family terribly. And one of these asylum seekers, a girl, 19-year-old girl called Rose, is chased into town by the Wilders, who are the gangs who rule the country to the north. And Rose has escaped from them. She's an asylum seeker, or asylee. She's escaped, and she's been separated from her sister Kaz somewhere along the way. So Kaz is still out there somewhere in Wilder country. And Rose is not fit to travel herself, so she has to convince Finn to go in search of her sister Kaz. And that's where the journey begins.
It's a thrilling read. Like, I honestly couldn't put it down. I think we both
Emily and I read it in one sitting. Well.
Yeah. And was I mean, in the best way, horrified when I got to the end and realised that there was no more story. So I've heard that you set out to write a page turner because specifically to encourage young boys to read.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's not just for young boys, or teenage boys. I think girls will get an equal amount of value out of it, reading it, because it's very strong female characters. Yeah. But because the protagonist, the 16-year-old boy, he leads us through the story, so everything we see is through the prism of this inexperienced young boy, really, who's been, albeit very resourcefully, been on his own for a couple of years. I teach at an outdoor recreation campus. I run the campus, and it's purely for 15-year-old boys. I just work with 15-year-old boys, which, you know, for better
tough
or for
audience.
Worse, yeah. So, but also I have a great respect for them. I have a great respect for their resilience and their strength when they're allowed to show it, and when they have the capacity to show it, and most importantly, when adults allow them to show it. They can't do it consistently because they're 16 years old, 15 years old, you know, and the old frontal lobe hasn't fully developed yet. But so when I was writing this story, this 16-year-old protagonist, in order for it to be realistic, he had to be, if you like, consistently inconsistent. So he does some great things, but he also does some stupid things, you know, and that's because he's 16. And his relationships with the two girls, firstly with Rose and then with Kaz, is really determined in the same way. So he kind of falls, you know, as boys do, you know. They fall very quickly, and he does, and establishes those relationships pretty quickly as well. And because he's been on his own for so long, apart from anything else, he's looking for companionship, you know, because he hasn't had that. He's only had his dog Rowdy, and Rowdy's a character all on his own, you know, who weaves his way through the plot as well.
He's a great character, and I don't want to say any spoilery things.
Yeah, sure.
Like the sort of book that you really don't want to spoil, but whenever I really love an animal in a book, I just spend the whole time freaking out.
That's something's going to happen.
And that's all I'll say.
Yeah, and I mean, there's two elements there, because there's Rowdy, who is who's Finn's dog, and then there's also Yogi, who is because Kaz is a horsewoman, and the thing that she can do best is she works with horses, and so she has this horse Yogi who you know is part of that whole plot as well.
I loved that about how we've got our protagonists with animals and then the bad guys are on trail bikes.
And it was really interesting as well, Rose started calling Finn Dog Boy because of the way he speaks. He has some problems talking. But also, he has a dog.
And look, it's you want your characters to be distinctive in some way that's gonna, that readers, number one, they're gonna believe. It's gotta be believable. But number two, that that kind of allows that distinction to be obvious in where there's dialogue and things like that. And just the fact that every time Finn meets somebody new, they kind of, you know, they either laugh at him or they, you know, or they make a, you know, barking noise or something because he has this kind of speech impediment. And he says, he terms it as, it's like talking with sand in your mouth, you know. plus he's been on his own for 2 years.
Not much required
just
to
talking
talk.
Pretty much to Rowdy. And he converses really well with Rowdy, you know. But of course when more humans come onto the scene, especially the two girls, you know, they're trying to figure out what on earth he's saying. And it also means that he can't sort of just splurge his story out immediately to Rose or to Kaz when he meets them. It comes out gradually, you know, as they become accustomed to the way that he talks.
I also liked how, to get an idea of how he sounds when he talks, you would occasionally have the girls imitate him.
Yeah.
Like that was,
yeah.
I thought that was a nice way of doing it.
Yeah, and there's a great little character called Willow who comes into it as well. And because she's only 9 years old, and she doesn't sort of understand that, you know, how embarrassing it might be, so she makes fun of him, you know, but he gets put into place pretty quickly by her father, you know. So, but every time someone new hears him, there's that breakdown, you know, in communication.
Another thing I have found really interesting about the book is that, because I'm a big fan of this type of post-apocalyptic survivalist type stuff. I was saying to you before the podcast, I love The Walking Dead.
Yeah.
I just get really into this sort of thing because it makes me think about the sort of person I am if you strip everything down. And like, am I the sort of person who would survive or not? I suspect probably not. Do you think that you would survive in these kind of conditions?
I think I'd have a good crack at it, yeah. But the young boy Finn, he does need to be resourceful. And if you notice when you're reading it, there is the theme of hunger weaves its way right through the plot as well. He's forever hungry. You know, can imagine a 16-year-old boy that doesn't have ready access to food, you know, at a minute's notice. Often he'll start the day hungry, he'll finish the day hungry, and it's part of what drives his character as well, and especially on the journey that they undertake in when he undertakes that journey on Rose's behalf to try and find Kaz.
Something that I found really interesting while I was reading was that Rose has another name. So she was originally known as Wada. Am I saying that right?
Yeah.
Excellent.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I was wondering what you thought about a name being a really important thing to choose for yourself as well as...
Yeah, absolutely. I was... Because these two girls are asylum seekers and they're not fully aware of their own history, especially the younger one, Kaz, Rose more so. But she associated that name with being a slave name because that's what she was bought and sold as, Wada. And even though that connects her with her... she's originally from Afghanistan, she understands. It's a passion name, and Wada means rose in English. And Kaz is actually Kashmala, which means flower, a little flower, in Pashtun as well, or Pashto. One of the things I was very concerned about when I was writing it was having enough, these two girls are sisters, but there needs to be differentiation between them. And one of them chooses to not embrace her past, but at least live with it, and one chooses to cast it off. And it's a real difference between the two of them. And there are a lot, the age difference as well, but there's also the way in which we hear through Rose the way in which she has protected Kaz when they've been basically in slavery.
That leads to another interesting point. You've given asylum seekers a place in Australia, but as indentured slaves almost. Mm. And I was wondering what led you to that particular idea or notion.
Yeah, absolutely. When people have read it or I've explained what the situation is in the novel with regard to asylum seekers, and they say, oh, that's a bit harsh, you know, that could never happen.
It's terrible.
Yeah, it's terrible. And yet now, in 2016, we have people in detention centres, offshore camps, where we know that there have been murders, rapes, suicides, and yet we live somehow comfortably with that because it's out of sight. So I don't think it's a particularly great leap to say that these asylum seekers, especially young, fit asylum seekers, are being bought in and sold at auction, you know, out to, and they talk about going to, you know, abattoirs and slaughterhouses and just the jobs that everyday Australians don't want to do. So it's really difficult, and especially with young adult, because it's an issue that you want to raise, but you've got to raise it really delicately. And otherwise you seem to be preaching and hitting them over the head with it. So it's subtly weaves its way through, and the you know, the crux of that whole thing happens right towards the end in one conversation between Kaz and Finn, you know, where she doesn't accuse him, but, you know, she says, what was wrong with this country? Why were you so cruel, you know?
Which is one of the things that really struck me when I was reading this, because so often in this sort of genre, you have life was good, then a thing happened and life was bad. And it's that simple. It's like Independence Day type, happy family, devastation. Yes. Yeah. But this really, I found myself so fascinated by the, like, the world that was painted of before the virus. And it is, as you said, like a horrifyingly realistic kind of progression. You could, you could sort of see something like that happening. And yeah, I was really interested by that, and how for Rose and Kaz, life wasn't great before, and it's not great now.
And I think, I mean, I actually, one of my, it's my favourite part of the book, that conversation that you know, where she says to Finn, you know, what was wrong with this country? You were so cruel. And he doesn't know, he doesn't have an answer for it. And it's on the tip of his tongue. And eventually he says, sorry. He's not quite sure what he's apologising for. But Kaz then, I just love her as a character, like she's so, and she says, it's okay, Finn, it's not your fault, it's never the kid's fault.
Yeah, you know? I remember that.
And so that's kind of, you know, it's not taking the blame away, but it's making the point very strongly about, you know, about what had happened prior to the virus. And they were golden days for Finn, you know, he was living happily with his family, he's going surfing, he's playing footy and, you know, going along and perving at the girls playing netball, and a 16-year-old boy, you know, and then it's all taken away from him. So he views the past with that, you know, with those rose-coloured glasses, I suppose. But Kaz and Rose's view of the past is very different from his, and it takes him a while to come to terms with that.
Kaz is a great character. Even before you meet her, you get descriptions of her, like riding off on a horse and stuff, and like she sort of has a presence before she even shows up.
I think, and we talked earlier about, you know, about how, what a good book this is for young boys in particular. And I think one of the reasons it works is because, and one of the reasons I wanted it to work was because they need to see strong female characters as well. Boys reading, even though it's a male protagonist. And those two girls, and especially Kaz, as she develops as a character, she's incredibly strong and durable, and has, you know, she, in a lot of ways, she leads Finn, you know, once they come together.
She's definitely very strong, strong character. And every character really, like, one thing that struck me is that, for instance, Finn's parents, who don't feature very much, but what we see of them and what we hear of them, it strikes you.
Yeah.
And, you know, characters like Ray, or even the, and I've forgotten his name, but the guy with the Santa beard, like, the white bushy beard.
Who's, we know who basically saved them in Longley and allowed the girls to escape.
I may have forgotten his name, podcast listeners, but I haven't forgotten what happened to him. He's foremost in my memory always. Like,
it's kind of confusing because I'm sitting here talking about this book that I wrote like 2 years ago, and I'm actually writing at the end of the sequel at the moment. So I'm going with these characters over here and thinking, oh yeah, no, back there.
That was a long time ago.
That's what happened.
I really liked that we saw a lot of different reactions as well to the end of the world. So it's not just Finn living by himself and then the Wilders, who are the crazy, scary gang people.
Yeah.
But there are also a community who come together and become a little bit like old-fashioned farmers. Mm. And there's Ray, who lives by himself. And it was just really nice to see the whole human experience.
Yeah. Ray was important because there needed to be some stability there that Finn needed to find. And even though there's an incredible age difference between them, and he developed that relationship. And it actually, the relationship developed more with Ray once Rose had come along, because that's when they actually start to work together.
Become to try family.
Yeah. Yes.
That is another part of the book that I really liked, seeing them sort of come together and refer to themselves as a family. And start feeling that after being...
Yeah, well, especially for Rose and for Kaz, Rose actually says that I've never had a family, because she doesn't have very few memories of her parents or what happened after she left the camp in Pakistan where she came from.
What were some of your inspirations? Like, where did this story first come to you from?
Yeah, well, it's actually interesting because I actually went to see Tim Winton speaking at the Melbourne Town Hall when Airy came out. And he was, he's such a laid-back, has such an incredibly dry sense of humour. And he was talking about Australian writers' almost fear of writing in the vernacular. Of making something so distinguishably Australian about a setting or about characters. And I was sort of taking this on board. And at this time, I was writing short stories and had quite a few published and was doing quite well at it. But I went home the next day and I wrote this short story, which The Road to Winter is based on. And it's really the first couple of chapters that became the first couple of chapters of the novel.
The surfing scenes?
Yeah, the surfing scenes, yeah. And they were a little bit longer than what actually made it into the novel. But unfortunately, originally the short story I wrote totally in the vernacular, and it was almost illegible. You couldn't read it. It was so impenetrable. But it was all written in slang of a 16-year-old boy, no punctuation, and it was just sort of blurting it out there. And so when I was looking for something that I could develop into a novel, for my first novel, that was the story that reached out to me the most. And I'd had, like I said, I'd had about 20-odd short stories published and won awards with others. But this is the one that, number one, it was where I lived. Number two, it involved that 16-year-old boy who I thought I could carry as a protagonist through. Mm-hmm. And the other thing is that I love telling stories. It's a story. If it's what drives this book is the story. It's a really strong narrative, and it is that page. I want to find out what happened. Yep. And it drives you through it. And that's the story component of it. And I think I think you end up often writing as a writer. You write the sort of books that you like to read, and I like to read books that have a strong narrative. I've often described it to people. You're reading, there's a lot of beautiful books, they're written, exquisite writing, but not much happens, and I sort of went the other way and thought, okay, there needs to be some reflection in here, there needs to be a description, but how can we limit that? And to do it through the eyes of a 16-year-old boy is ideal because they have virtually zero capacity to reflect. It's just what's happening now, what happens next, and as a writer, sometimes that's hard because you've got to pull back the language, And yeah. We had a little launch down at the coast on the weekend and I was responding to a question there. And I said, these characters have spoken to me for a long time. These characters have woken me up at 4 a.m, we have these conversations, and you're almost having arguments with the characters. I've argued with Finn a lot, and often along the lines of, I could write this so much better, than you can say it. But of course, his voice is what has to drive the whole thing. So you're paring back your language the whole time. You're paring back the description so that it is that realistic voice. Because 16-year-old boys are not terribly descriptive, and they do live very much in the moment. And sometimes they make dumb decisions because they're living in the moment, like his choice to go surfing when when Rose
in the middle
is,
of all yeah, life or death situation, you might call it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
I thought Finn was a great character. I particularly enjoyed seeing people react to him, seeing like the slow realization from Rose and later Cass to the fact that this is a gentle, nurturing person, which I don't think either of them had encountered for a while.
There's a really lovely scene that I like when Rose is not well and she has to trust Finn. And she's obviously not used to trusting anybody, let alone males. And he has to convince her, I'm gentle, I'm not going to hurt you, you know. And she ends up going along with that without giving too much away.
It is, like you said, there's a lot of action and it is a page turner, but it is really character driven as well, which I think is such a great combination when you find that.
Yeah.
Because many, many times it'll be like a thrilling read, but it's more about what's happening as opposed to who it's happening to. And in this case, strong characters.
And I think part of that is having really definable characteristics for each one of those without having a cast of thousands. But just little things that twig for the reader about. And I mean, obviously, the sound of the trail bike.
Yeah.
Instance, you know, and that's the, you know, get to the edge of the seat and that the way that that appears at different stages through the story as
it's
well.
It's menacing.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, and it's also, I like that image because it is menacing and it's totally out of place in what's left of that, you know, that world that they're living in.
So you mentioned that you're working on the sequel. Mm-hmm. Are we allowed to ask anything about it? Like, because I'm just really curious.
You can ask general questions.
Is it going to be a trilogy, or do you think, or are you not sure yet?
I'm not sure yet. I've actually written the first draft of the sequel, and
and we're grinning. Just
yeah,
so that you know.
I think if the first thing that I'll say, if you've loved the first part of that, you'll like the sequel because it becomes equally character driven, and the relationship between Finn and Kaz in all its facets, which doesn't always go smoothly, you know, because teenage relationships don't, let alone when they're in stressful situations. So that relationship chops and changes its way through while all this other stuff is going on. And it's pretty obvious from the end of the first book that they're going to be off on a journey, and that's pretty much where they do go.
Yeah. Oh, I'm excited. What would you say was the most challenging aspect of writing this book?
Having come from short stories, where you can sit down and knock off a short story in 2 or 3 hours as a first draft, and then you can put it in a drawer and you can come back to it and... when you're writing a novel, especially for the first time, you're writing for 12 months with nobody else seeing it, you know, and you're thinking, oh God, I hope I'm on the right track here, because if I'm not, I've wasted so much time. But it's the difficult thing was every time you sit down, no matter what's been happening during your day or what you've been doing for the weekend or whatever, you've got to find that voice again, because it's the voice of the narrator, of Finn. So you might have had a bad day at work or something, and you've got to come back in and you've got to find that voice again that's consistent with what's come before. And that I found the hardest thing to do once I had it. And generally I do that by maybe just going back and reading a chapter that I'd just finished or wherever I got to in the narrative, and pick it up and run with it from there. But I'm a total pantser when I write. Like, it's just and that's where the characters, again, sometimes led me, you know, almost as though they're trying to trick me into going this way, you know. And sometimes they'd sort of, you know, things would happen and I'd written them and it's almost as though they deliberately painted me into a corner, you know. Write your way out of this one and see how you go, you know. And I think you do have that. You build that relationship with your characters as they, because they've got to develop. They can't stay static. Yeah. They've got to develop and move with what they learn along the way. Even though this all happens over the space of a little over a month.
Do you have any favourite page turners?
Look, I don't. I've a little bit of a confession. I'm not a huge YA reader. And in a way, that was almost deliberate. I didn't go researching YA stuff because, to begin with, I just wanted to write a story that I believed in. And so it became a YA story as much as anything else. And when you write a manuscript like that, a publisher's got to put it on a shelf somewhere, or a bookseller's got to put it on a shelf somewhere. They've got to know where it fits. And so it became more YA. So most of my reading is adult literature. When I find time to read, and I try to do that as much as I can. But I have probably not dissimilar from a lot of people, you know, books that they have just that they treasure that they don't want to. So for me, books like Jasper Jones is a really good example of one which kind of moves genres because it's the teenage protagonist, but it doesn't necessarily fit into YA, but it's sold as YA. I love that. So in terms of where I came from, what I was looking for, sort of John Marston meets Jasper Jones, that sort of thing. And again, two authors there that, you know, Craig Silvey and John Marston that I love. And then some of that adult stuff finds its way in as well.
It's a great space, that, because the lines can be really blurry.
Yeah.
Sometimes, you know, just because your main character is a teenager, it doesn't, like you've got books like The Book Thief, for example,
yes,
that could fit in either category.
Yeah, again, a favourite of mine.
Yeah, so, yeah. Right. It's a really, I like that space. Yeah. And I think this fits in sort of around there. Because, you know, it's just a really, it's a gripping read.
Yeah.
Like,
absolutely.
Yeah. Hard to put down.
Yeah.
Difficult to finish because...
I don't
want to say
book.
The cliffhanger because it's not a cliffhanger.
Yeah.
I think, like, you know, there's that difference between a cliffhanger and a game changer.
Yes.
So, like, I feel like the game has changed at the end of this book and that you're ready for more,
yes,
but you're not left dangling in uncertainty, which is
my
favourite.
Yeah, and I mean, part of that was to whet the appetite for what comes next.
Yeah.
And I think it also makes, in some ways, it makes your task easier in a sequel because they've got the characters already. You don't need to. There are some new characters that are introduced, but the reader's so attached to these characters already that you don't have to rebuild them. It's pick up and run with it again. And as long as you get them straight back into that storyline, they'll go with them. But I also like the idea of the characters are a year older, that the reader is a year older as well. You know,
yeah.
And these two characters and the peripheral characters as well. And Willow takes on, you know, much more of a role. They develop as they go, as they should, because they're growing, they're learning, they're having all these experiences, good and bad. So I love, you know, and therefore Finn's language becomes a little bit more developed as well. His understanding of the world, because he's outside of Angari, and so he changes and develops as a character too.
I am excited for this book, and it depresses me to think about how long away it is. Well, Mark, thank you so, so much for coming in and speaking to us today. It's been a pleasure to meet you.
Yeah.
Absolutely, thank you.
And podcast listeners, The Road to Winter is available from your local bookstore or online at Booktopia.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Booktopia podcast. And don't forget to subscribe to us on SoundCloud and iTunes. And if your eyeballs need a workout, check us out on YouTube at Booktopia TV. And don't forget, for all books featured on this episode and all episodes of the Booktopia podcast, head to Booktopia, Australia's local bookstore, at www.booktopia.com.au. Thanks for listening.